I said, okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening here on Blog Talk Radio, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and I wish to extend the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum to all of the listeners, whether you are calling in by telephone or logging in. We are live from the Elevated Places Studios in Chicago, Illinois. 347-324-5091 is the number for you to call in and join this discussion. 347-324-5091. Or invite people to log in via internet at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. That's blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And when you go to my show page, you will also be able to link to me on Twitter and Facebook. And I want to extend an invitation to all of the listeners to visit avaspeaks.com. That's avaspeaks.com. And if you're interested in any lectures, whether it be on DVD or CD or my books, you can obtain them by going to visit avaspeaks.com. Now, tonight we are discussing, as always, a subject of very critical importance, and under the umbrella of the idea of separation and independence, I'm reminded of, and I entitled the program that tonight, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's warning to all of us: do for self or suffer the consequences. And so we're pondering over, in the wake of our brother Barack Obama winning a second term decisively, but in the wake of that, we have to look at the landscape and ask, what is the future of black people in America? And in the face of what is happening, should we not become more self-sufficient in a hurry in the face of the acute racism resulting in continuing murders of our people, and in fact, another murder of a black teenager in Florida, cold-blooded, conscious, intentional murder, and also, as our Elevated Places contributor, who will also be with us tonight, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, pointed out last week, and we're going to continue that discussion, there is serious white flight from not a neighborhood, but from the continent of the United States, even as we speak. And so we need to talk about those things and consider the direction of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and not allow ourselves to fall into a trap of being accused of reverse racism. First of all, there is no such thing. But we need to talk about the realities of our future. And we're going to do that. We have an excellent, excellent program tonight and some wonderful guests who are going to be joining us shortly. And that includes Sister Mahaleka Muhammad, who is a co-founder and president of Girls to Goddess. That is a very, very excellent mentoring program. We're going to talk about that shortly. And she is also joined by her partner, who is creative director of From Girl to Goddess, Sister Marisha Muhammad. But before we open up with our two beloved sisters, I want to, of course, welcome our co-host of Elevated Places, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Brother Terrence, assalamu alaikum.
Oh, alaikum salam. How is everybody? How are everybody doing?
Oh, everyone's doing great. So blessed to be alive.
Oh, yes.
And
beautiful day.
I'm going to come to you shortly. I do want to acknowledge, too, and welcome the Elevated Places contributor, our agricultural economist, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Well, alaikum salam, and I wish I had half of the personality as Brother Terrence.
Well, that's a great compliment, but I think when people start seeing your new photo that's going to start appearing with your articles in the Final Call, one of which I want to talk about tonight. You look like you got a lot of personality also, and our listeners
yeah.
certainly think so. So, Brother Terrence, briefly, can you update us on news in the Nation of Islam?
Well, yes. You know, it's tis the season. We have entered into the month of December, and, you know, jolly times are here in the month of December. And, no, not Christmas, but we're in that season of Savior's Day. And I just want to make sure that everybody know that Savior's Day is coming up February. And the crowning event of Black History Month in downtown Chicago at the Conrad Hilton Hotel. Go to NOI.org to learn more about Savior's Day. And one of the things that we want to also mention is that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is asking us to help him raise some economic funds so we can build this nation that we're talking about. And as the people have mentioned that our sister Nicki Minaj made $18 million this past year, and our brother Jay-Z made $50 million. And even though they may make good music to some people, they're not raising up a nation and building jobs for our community. So the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is looking to gain and to build $10 million for a Savior's Day gift to help us build jobs, build schools, buy land, so that when these 50 states or people that want to secede, we will have our money so we can have a land of our own. And speaking of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he does not only just speak to the black man here in the hills of North America, going all across the United States, but he has just recently been on a Caribbean tour. He was in Grenada. He was in Belize, he was in Dominica, he was also in Barbados, St. Thomas, and he was scheduled to go to Belize, but he had to postpone and cancel that trip. But he is a man that is not stopping trying to raise the condition of us as a people and letting those that claim to be free in the Caribbean make sure that they build the economic state for themselves. And I do want to speak that we are in that season where we say it's a jolly time, but be mindful, this is some of the most dangerous times of robbing, stealing, and killing that people are out there looting because they know people are happy and spending money. So be very mindful as we go out. And as we spoke at the beginning of the hour, there are more killings have happened in our communities and more people are even killing themselves. So this is not a joyful time. This is a very dreadful time, and we need to be mindful and be very careful about our comings and going. But we want to be very happy that Savior's Day is coming around the corner, 2013, in the city of Chicago. And also, I do want to mention that I was also at a conference this past weekend in D.C. called the Roots Conference. It was a unconference where you made the decisions and you made up your own workshops when you got there, and there was progressive people across the country. And one of the things I said, we must organize our people to empower them. And a lot of people agree with that statement. Instead of coming in and doing nothing for the community during elections times, but what are we building and how are we empowering the community? So I think in 2013, instead of trying to elect this and that person, we need to really do and follow the lead of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and go out into our communities and have real conversations and real dialogue with our people to see the needs of our people and go to work to build something that can help support our people, have jobs, have better education, have security in their neighborhoods, and that our children can grow into a safe neighborhoods and our elderly do not have to be put in homes, but they can actually come out on their porches and live in safe communities. So
yes,
that is my report for
all
this
right.
evening on this wonderful show, Elevated Places. And I do want to close by saying, please tweet everyone you know about Elevated Place, Facebook everyone you know about Elevated Place, tell a friend, tell a cousin, have them call in and listen to the best show on Thursday nights on the planet, and that is Elevated
Place. And even contact your play cousin. Every black person has some play cousins. But I thank you, Brother Terrence, and of course you stay with us because you always bring so much to the conversation. And at this time, you know, you talked about community, and that's a great segue into this segment. I am blessed to have been invited to Detroit, Michigan this weekend. Detroit is the home of Mosque Number One, and I will be in the city, and I was invited by a very, very beautiful sister who is doing some great work there, and she and another sister that who is also very, very powerful is joining her. They're both on the line. First, Mahaleka Muhammad. She is a mother, community servant, organizer, and youth mentor. And she's currently actually studying business administration at Wayne County College, Community College in Detroit. She's the co-founder and executive director of From Girl to Goddess. From Girl to Goddess is a mentoring program. It's a nonprofit organization, and it provides character development and self-esteem programs for girls from ages 11 to 17 in metropolitan New York. And I know for me, as a mother of a 14, nearly 15-year-old and a 16-year-old, and the incredible struggle that our young girls are facing in really trying to reach womanhood in America's culture, it is all but impossible without help. And our sister, Mahaleka, is an advocate for at-risk youth. She emphasizes assisting teenage girls building self-esteem, love of self. And she and her team have served over 700 girls, teaching them knowledge and love of self, principles of femininity, and how to change burdens into blessings, at home and abroad, and the importance of being virtuous. And she has facilitated youth self-esteem, mother and daughter workshops at Savior's Day in 2009 and 10, the Charles Wright African American Museum, Fellowship Chapel Church, and helping to save women and girls from self-destruction. She has held different positions at Muhammad Mosque Number One and currently serves as student assistant secretary and resides in Detroit with her 17-year-old son. And to learn about From Girl to Goddess, please visit girltogoddess.org. That's girltogoddess.org. And also joining Sister Mahaleka is Sister Marisha Muhammad, who is creative director of Girl to Goddess. And she's responsible for curriculum development, classroom instruction, and also assists Sister Mahaleka in other responsibilities related to the organization. And Sister Marisha is in the public school system in Metro Detroit and actually provides conflict resolution, intervention, and support to hundreds of students. And she is the proud mother of three daughters and two sons. She's been married for 13 years. So Sister Mahaleka and Sister Marisha, thank you both so much for joining us on Elevated Places. Assalamu alaikum.
Salam.
All right.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Impressive work that both of you are doing. Sister Mahalika, maybe you could start us off. I know you invited me in this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very excited about coming in tomorrow and staying through Sunday, culminating in a talk at Muhammad Mosque number 1. But if you could talk a little bit about the weekend, but also about Girl to Goddess itself and your plans for the immediate future as well.
Yes, ma'am. So thank you again, Sister Dr. Ava, and
yes,
your team for inviting us to come on before you come into the city. And so pretty much from Girl to Goddess is a mentoring program, and we actually have, or our niche is working with girls 11 to 17, but we also do a lot of mother-daughter workshops. And what we do in those workshops with the moms and girls is to get them what we call work it out. So they have to actually face each other and address whatever issues that may be on the floor. We have a series of questions, and Marisha can go into that a little bit more because she's really, really good in that area. We provide in school and after school weekend activities for girls. And through that, the partnerships that we are or have been blessed to create over the years, people would invite us in to work with them. And so we get a chance to work with a lot of organizations. Currently, both Marisha and I are working with one of our brothers, Brother Raphael Muhammad, who also has a conflict resolution and peer mediation program in the city of Detroit, and Detroit Public Schools in several districts throughout the state. And that is called the 180 program, and that allows us to go in to serve even more children, taking our skills from Girl to Goddess and giving that female component to the youth in Detroit. And so what we try to do with the girls, first of all, they know that we're Muslims, and they know we follow the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and we have not encountered any resistance. In great number, put it that way. We like to be upfront with them because, one, we dress that way. It's obvious that we're Muslims. And then, two, the children are not exposed and have no concept of who the Nation of Islam is, let alone Minister Farrakhan. And so their first representation, as far as we're concerned, are myself and Marisha and Sister Lenora, who works with us as well. And so we want to make sure that we always give that representation. That's important because as the system is falling, and I know it's falling in Detroit, you all read the news. I know
you guys
know about Detroit. So where goes Detroit goes the whole nation. And so we know if it's falling in Detroit, it's like that all over the world. And so we're giving them an option or another alternative, if you will, to look at other solutions. For a long time in Detroit, did not want the component of mentoring in the schools because they felt that it wasn't something that you can academically or improve the children's grades academically. And what they're finding is that a lot of the things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad set up for us, they are actually employing or applying in the school system. And now they're finding that they cannot even function without some type of mentoring and conflict-based program, because the children on a daily basis are fighting and all of that. So we know that that's a reality all over the country. And so what we'd like to do is just to go in and offer the girls a big sister approach, but we go in as Muslims. They love us. We love them. We're involved with their parents and their moms in particular, because the majority of them are raised by single moms. And so this weekend, you coming in is actually to help us celebrate our 7th anniversary, and that is going to be the full weekend. You'll get a chance, inshallah, to the NUI students in Detroit tomorrow, and then a women's only event, and there will be some single fathers who are raising daughters, which is a growing concern as well. And then, like you said, Sunday at the mosque. So we're looking forward to that. And just very excited at what Allah is going to bless us with through you this weekend.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. And Sister Marisha, you handle curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And as Sister Mahalika just said, you can give us a little bit more about what goes on in terms of classroom instruction and the curriculum itself that you work on. And I'm very impressed with what you do in the school system as well, and how that has helped you become such a valuable resource tool.
I am definitely grateful to Allah for even just having the desire to do this kind of work, and I would be totally ungrateful if I did not thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for imparting that spirit in me, because I didn't have the desire to do that until I heard his voice say, you know, we have something to offer to our people. But I went to University of Detroit Mercy, actually pursuing a degree in education. I wanted to teach English in high school. And throughout my studies, every time I was in a classroom and had a chance to work with students while pursuing my degree, I ended up doing more talking to the students about their lives and their issues than I was teaching English. And so I found that was where more of my passion was. I mean, there's definitely a need for literacy in our children to have math skills and the skills that school is intended for. But some of our students couldn't get to the workload because they were just burdened with what was going on at home. But once I got to know the students, you know, I just looking at your life, you begin to see what your mission is. And for me, Malik and I often joke because we would buy our cars thinking about, you know, children or how many people we could fit, you know, often to our husband's dismay, you know, they're like, can we have a coupe? And I'm like, we need a minivan or an SUV. Because we're always making room for other children because there's a need for that in the community. Before we started Girl to Goddess, those of us who are on the team were often the ones who were just taking girls with us, extra trips on the weekend, or spending time with the people in our community. And so that's kind of the root of how the organization got started. But in the classroom, I began to develop curriculum based on what, you know, it was really student-led and student-inspired. The things that I kept hearing repetitiously come up from the girls. From abusive situations, from self-esteem issues, from how their mothers related to their boyfriends and them. And those things I began to see that there was a need for. And so some of the things that we do in the classroom are question-based. There are writing exercises. There are sometimes practical activities, exercises where we're moving around the classroom. Because some people cannot vocalize the issues that are going on. So we have exercises where they're writing. We may use journals. One of the things that the girls like most is the stuff box, where they can just get out whatever's in their head that they don't want anybody to know about, but something they want to let go of but can't give voice to. So we provide things like that, just tools for them to use as a release. And with the technology that we've been given by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan and Dianetics, we know that sometimes just moving things, you know, into a different space in our consciousness begins the healing process. So in terms of the curriculum, I try to keep those things in mind and try to create activities that are going to get them out. I mean, because we're not going to do, like, a psychological assessment of, you know, the child when they come in. We do try to have resources and people that we can refer for those exceptional circumstances. But that sometimes the students just need a voice, and they need a secure circle where they can say what happened and be real about it. And that's the kind of environment we try to create in the classroom. It can't always be pen and paper. Sometimes it might be some music. Sometimes it's going to be some tears. But we try to keep them active and engaged and let them lead, because that's where, you know, where we know how to steer our work. So that's a big part of what we do. She talked about the burdens into blessings and, you know, the interactions with the mothers. When we have the opportunity to have sessions with the mothers, those tend to be the most powerful. Because a lot of women love to put their children in our hands and kind of walk away. And then we kind of find out that a lot of their problems, you know, we find that a lot of it is pathology. And sometimes the mothers aren't even aware of their role, you know, and how their children are acting or responding, you know. And but they're very quick to put them in our hands, and sometimes we got to be the mirror and say, hey, Ma, hold up. This doesn't happen without you. So let's take a look. And that's even tougher than working with the girls, you know, sometimes. Working with the mothers
is tougher.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, we're always respectful, but just try to offer them a different perspective you know, how and how they see things, and just be a voice and advocate for both sides, mother and daughter, because that's the only way we're going to be effective. Bridging that gap between the two is the most important in what we do.
I agree, because that's the reality of the situation, the home.
Mm-hmm.
And you're touching on something so crucial in the Black community, and that is that we're all, you know, parents and children, man and woman, we're also stressed out because we have stayed with the former slave master so far beyond the time. That living in this reality is so stressful that we almost seek escape from one another rather than learning how to go to one another, you know, and be a comfort. And I love your work with the mother-daughter relationship, because we all need that.
We
need that help. And I know, you know, when our girls reach that teenage phase where they're neither woman nor child anymore, and all these thoughts and hormones are swirling around, and it's real, you know. We can't just dismiss it and say, well, just go somewhere and sit down, and then just fill their life with don'ts, don't do this, don't do that, you know, as opposed to providing them with these positive outlets. And so that is wonderful. And we're very appreciative, and hopefully one day soon you all can start franchising and spread this work out, because there are mentoring programs, but not like yours. And I've been exposed to you all before, and I know that the way you bring in the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the direction from the minister into this is so on time, because I think it's only that body of knowledge that has the power to help our youth today.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and doing that unashamedly too, as Malika stated earlier. I mean, we don't all, you know, come in and say that's what Muhammad said and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, but when it's appropriate, you might hear that, because we're not trying to turn everybody, and you know, to a Muslim per se.
Precisely.
Doing the work,
yeah.
And we have to remind them of the reference. You know, it would be a disservice to not, you know, reference who we are and what we represent.
Right.
It would be a disservice.
But as you're saying, it's more it manifests itself through the knowledge and the sensitivity that you manifest. And I love that point too, that we have to realize this: it's not about necessarily converting people to a religion or pushing a theology, but because Islam, if we truly understand it, is a way of life.
Absolutely.
Religion is just one manifestation, but that's not the ultimate mission. The ultimate mission is the spiritual resurrection of our people, not to necessarily push on them a label.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you all are enjoying so much success, because you really understand that concept.
Yes, and then, you know, and to add to what both of you were saying, what I love most, we're actually for the first time, Girl to God is actually doing, working with MUI students. And we call that series the Respectful Life Series, which is inspired off of the minister's series of lectures. On that title. And what they do specifically, now we can get in there and we can say stuff like Master Farhat Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and God came through you. They know that, so it's always refreshing to do that as well. But what we're doing with the MUI students is we're actually getting them prepared for leadership in the Nation of Islam. And these are children that are very passionate. They are Muslims. I call them the Million Man March babies. Because a lot of us were pregnant in our spirit, our energy, that seed that they were created from came from the spirit of the Million Man March. And so these children are very dedicated, very focused, and they love Islam. And so they understand, or they're starting to understand, that it's more than just coming to the mosque, and that they need to go and do this, you know, different things. So what the Respect for Life does is gets them prepared for that other phase of our work, which is going into the community And so we just had our, well, we do this event every year in Thanksgiving where we go and serve meals to our families or to the community at large. And but this year I allowed the MUI students to plan it, to organize it. They went into the communities, they fed it, and they've been doing it since they were little because we've been doing that in Detroit for about 6 years. So they were like 9 and 10 year olds serving meals, and now that they're 14, 15, 16 years old, they're actually now putting all of those efforts that they've been doing going into the community, and they are actually connecting with the people. And so that program is very, very important and powerful because they want to serve. And they want to do it in a way that we don't have to force them to do it. They want to do it. And they get offended if we don't prepare or provide these avenues for them. And so we try to keep them very, very busy and engaged. But I'm thankful, like Marisha, I don't know where we would be. I know I don't know where I would be. Well, maybe I do. Without the people. Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I already know where I was going down, and so I know this has saved my life. And how dare we not give something back to the children who are going to be taking care of us essentially? And so it will be a disservice to us, to our future, if we don't give back. And perhaps mentoring youth is not for everybody, and I understand that. But when you have programs like from Girl to Goddess, the 180 program, and some of the other programs around the country that the believers are doing, it is important that you support us in these efforts because we represent you. And we represent the minister. And so everything that we do is always top-notch. If you looking at a Black person and you know that that means they're God, then you have to give that 100%. And that's what connects those girls to us. That's why their mothers literally drop them off with us. There are some girls we meet the day of, and their parents are like, just take them, because they're overwhelmed, but they see something in our presence that connects them with us immediately. We don't even have to say very much, and it's kind of dangerous because you just drop your children off. I always have to say, no, let me give you my phone number. Let me give you this. This is where we're going. I have the girls call them. Because they just give their children away. And when you find women and men, women in particular, giving their children away like that, probably for various reasons, we have to honor that. And we have to, that's humbling because their lives are in our hands. And we call on Allah and the Master Farouk Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the minister, their teaching to get us through that. And I love the fact that we don't have to hide that we're Muslims. I love that, and I don't think I would be able to serve properly if I had to hide that.
Oh, no.
I just won't even take an assignment. If you got a problem with us, then, you know, you're going to lose out in that respect. But we don't go in saying you better be a Muslim, but our way and our dress and our the power and the light that Allah gives us attracts them to us, and that's, I believe, contributes to our success. And we have fun, too. So we're like, even though we're moms with children, Marisha has 5 kids, I only have 1 son. We're literally like teenagers. We identify with them, yet we're still adults, and they respect that. And that's what gives them that connection.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I want to thank you both from the bottom of my heart for sharing this time with us. And I certainly look forward to coming in tomorrow and spending a wonderful weekend with Girl to Goddess, and also visiting the mosque and MUI. I'm very excited about it, as is my family. But again, thank you both, Sister Marisha, Sister Mahalaika, Muhammad, Girls to Goddess, Girl to Goddess, Girl to Goddess. And to learn more about this wonderful mentoring program, listeners, please visit www.girltogoddess.org. So may Allah bless both of you. And listeners, we're going to go to break at this point. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion from last week on the issue of separation and the secession petitions that are lengthening in their signatures, where every one of the 50 states has a petition to secede. But states such as Texas are literally up in the hundreds of thousands in the wake of the election of a black man to his second term. So when we come back, we will continue that discussion. And then later, our program, we will be joined by Mark Thompson, the host of Make It Plain on Satellite XM Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad. We are live on blogtalkradio.com/elevated places. That's blogtalkradio.com/elevated places. And we are joined this evening by Brother Terrence Muhammad, my co-host, and Elevated Places contributor, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. In our first segment, we had Sister Mahalika Muhammad and Marisha Muhammad from Girl to Goddess Mentoring Program. And I do want to repeat that you can learn more about that program by visiting girltogoddess.org. Now, before we continue, I would like to share some language from Message to the Black Man by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And because it's just so timely in view of where we are at this moment as a people. But in this excerpt, he is talking about the story of Lazarus and the rich man, and the story that Jesus must have foreseen at the time. And he talks about this beggar being charmed by the wealth of the rich man, to whom he was a servant. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says he could not make up his mind to go seek something for self. This beggar was offered a home in paradise, but could not make up his mind to leave the gate of his master, the rich man, wishing for that which God had in store for destruction along with its owner. The beggar's eyes could not turn from that perishable wealth. So it is with the American Negroes. They are charmed by the luxury of their slave master and cannot make up their minds to seek for self something of this good earth, though hated and despised by the rich man and full of sores caused by the evil treatment of the rich man. On top of that, he is chased by the rich man's dogs and still remains a beggar at the gate, though the gates of paradise were ever open to him and the gates of hell were open to receive his rich master. The American Negro has the same gates of paradise open to them, but are charmed by the wealth of America and cannot see the great opportunity that lies before them. They are suffering untold injustices at the hands of the rich. They have been and still are being lynched and burned. Their women and children are beaten all over the country. The slaves' houses and churches are bombed by the slave master. The girls used as prostitutes, raped in public. Yet Negroes are on their knees, begging the rich man to treat them as he treats himself and his own kind. The poor beggar kindly asks for crumbs, a job, and a house in the neighborhood of the rich man. And he says to, he goes on later in this article to say, in Message to the Black Man, the slave master has given you enough education to go and do for self. But this education is not being used for self. It's being offered back to the slave master to help them keep you a dependent people. And then later he says, we must stop relying upon the white man to care for us. And he gives us 12 things to do, and I'm going to go through them quickly. And Elevated Places deals with that first one. Number one, separate yourselves from the slave master. Two, pool your resources, education, and qualifications for independence. Three, stop forcing yourselves into places where you are not wanted. Four, make your own neighborhood a decent place to live. Five, rid yourselves of the lust of wine and drink and learn to love self and your kind before loving others. Six, unite to create a future for yourself. Seven, build your own homes, schools, hospitals, and factories. Eight, do not seek to mix your blood through racial integration. Nine, stop buying expensive cars, fine clothes, and shoes before being able to live in a fine home. 10, spend your money among yourselves. 11, build an economic system among yourselves. 12, protect your women. So I just wanted to read that as a springboard for this segment of our discussion. Dr. Ridgely, you recently wrote an article entitled Will White Flight Leave Us Home Alone?
Yes.
And you had started, you briefly alluded to that position as we ended last week's show. But I want you to, if you don't mind, if you could touch on and share with the listeners, I don't know if most of us were aware of the statistics, the hard statistics behind your title, White Flight, Leaving Us Home Alone.
Yes. Well, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Before I get started, I just want to say one thing about the girls to goddess.
Yes.
What you just showed. You know, there's so many positive things that people in the nation are doing across the nation, but because we are so isolated and we don't have many avenues by which we can get the message out, we don't know about them. So this
right.
program is an opportunity to get out to the rest of the world the positive activities of many of us in the nation. So I just thank Allah for this program and those beautiful sisters and what they're doing.
Yes.
And yes, they need to franchise what they're doing across the nation.
That's
now,
right.
That being said, what happened right after the election, and there was a cry in terms of, you know, why did Romney not win? And the first statistic came up was that there was 6,680,000 fewer white people that voted in 2012 than in 2008. So my first question was, did they just stay home? Are they gone? So I began to do some research, and indeed it seems like quite a few are leaving, especially since 2009. It says that 1.6 million U.S. households—that's the households, mother, father, child—have already made the decision to leave. 1.8 million are seriously considering and likely to leave. 7.7 million are somewhat serious about leaving and may do so. 3 million are seriously considering purchase of non-U.S. property. 10 million are somewhat serious about purchase of non-U.S. property. And the number, the people who are leaving, is not retirees. The people are leaving are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. The largest group that's leaving or planning to leave is the 25 to 35-year-old young adults. And this is the most energetic and innovative and creative of the American people And so they're leaving because they feel that they can get better jobs in Asia and Latin America than they can in America. They're not even talking about going to Europe because Europe has their own problems. So they're going to the new developing markets, new developing economies. And by them leaving, you know, that's also the reproductive age of producing.
Right.
Now, statistics have indicated that by 2046, white people will be the minority. But that's based on the projections of births and deaths. That's not based on them just getting up on a boat, on a plane, and hijacking it out of here. So it seems like we're going to be home alone before we know it. And now we can understand why they're giving President Obama such a hard time on not fixing the bridges or the infrastructure, because they don't plan to be here. They are actually leaving us home alone. Now, what we going to do? What we going to do? Biden's leaving. What we going to do?
And really, that's the narrative the Honorable Elijah Muhammad lifts. That's that mindset of this Lazarus, you
yes.
know, where
yes.
we have refused
yes.
to leave the gate. I mean, we've been beggars ever since we were released from the plantation, and then prevented from doing for self in post Civil War America.
Yes.
And we suffered through Jim Crow, lynching, segregation, discrimination, and now we are completely excluded from any discussion that's going on about improvement in the economy. It doesn't include us at all. Even the unemployment statistics,
right.
They never get – I don't even hear the president get up under where that 7% or 8% figure
yeah.
is
yes.
coming from, because unemployment among Caucasian people is really not that high.
That's right.
It's more around in the 4 to 5% range, which is the norm in most Western nations. It's that 15-20% and above in the black community that keeps the overall average
that's right.
high.
And well, you know,
that's not being addressed at all.
well, you know, even those figures, when you say unemployment, these are people who are still looking for employment.
Right.
But if you do the research, you'll find in the major cities that now – amongst black men, there's only 50 percent or less actually have jobs.
Well, that's right.
I said 50% or less who actually have jobs. So what's going on is they just have dropped out of the statistics. And all the cities, the major cities, have dropped since the 1970s in terms of the percent of black men who have jobs have gone down. So the issue is not unemployment, but it's employment and putting ourselves to work, because the system does not intend to put us to work, so we have to figure out a way to put ourselves to work. And this is why the minister expressed it in Tennessee, at Tennessee State, that is our young black men and women in college are going to have to help us to develop some jobs for the people in the streets, because it seems like our elders have failed, and hopefully they'll get one more chance through the Minister of Economic Development Program to help build a future, because right now they have failed to do so. So we have to reach out to our young people to get them to do something now in preparing for their future, since we as the older people don't seem to get our act together. We're just sitting and waiting for the inevitable, it seems, but our young people don't want to suffer the consequences.
That's right. Well, let's go to the phones for a moment. We've got people holding. Sister Halima is on the line, and she has both a comment and a question. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I just had a comment and a question. The first comment was that the sister's presentation, I had wondered, had you or her organization heard of a wonderful one in Washington, D.C. called Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation that is similar to what she has done. Number two, I was curious to know what your definition of a goddess is. I was curious to learn that from either the sister presenter or you, Dr. Ava Muhammad. And the third question, and then I'll go on mute, is how can we go about, I live in Buffalo, New York, and how can I go about bringing you, Dr. Ava Muhammad, to Buffalo for a speaking engagement?
Well, number one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write your number down. And I'm going to have someone get in touch with you right after the program about how you can have me come in. Our technical expert will get your information, and we'll contact you. What is the name again of the organization in Washington?
It's called Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation.
Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation.
Yes.
No, I was not familiar with it, but right in line with what Dr. Ridgely has referenced, one of the main functions of Elevated Places is to expose us to one another's work and to resources. And so I'm glad to be hearing about it because I was not aware of it. And so perhaps if we can get, when we speak to you off air, we can find more information about that entity as well. But, you know, the term God means force and power. And goddess is simply the what the sisters are using there is a feminine expression of that same term, God. So it's talking about the development in the original woman, the development and ultimately the expression of her force and power, which is virtually unlimited. And so we're growing from girl to goddess. And of course, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad named the civilization class of the Nation of Islam Muslim Girls Training. A girl meaning a young woman, in other words, a female who ultimately is being taught and trained and growing into a woman. And so this work is so critical because we know a nation can rise no higher than its woman. So thank you, Sister Halima, and we've got your information, and you're going to hear from one of our administrative assistants, and we'll make that happen. I would love nothing more than coming to Buffalo. Thank you so much. Now, we've got Brother Joseph on the line, and he has a comment. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Places, Brother Joseph.
Wa alaikum salam, sister. How are you?
Wonderful, sir.
Yes, ma'am, sister. First of all, I want to thank Allah for being on this line, and thank Allah for you all as well, Dr. Mahir, Brother Terrence, and the rest of the hosts and guests. My comment is on the sister. I like what she's doing. That's good, from girl to goddess, because I had put it in my mind to start a same program, but I'm going to do it from boys to a goddess. And I want to give some information to her. I know I got that website.
Website, yes,
dot,
sir.
Girltogoddess.org. Yes, ma'am. I will be using that. But comment on separation. And that's just true. See, right now we are at that point, been at that point, as a matter of fact. And Allah has been teaching the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who's been teaching the man of the Lord Farrakhan, about separating from day one. Because when the God looked down at the wheels of time, he seen from day one we need to separate, coming out of the womb of our mother, because that womb of that side of the world, it's an evil womb, because we got to understand that the mind of these people is the mind of the devils, no doubt. They are straight out uncut endeavors. And I like what Dr. Richard was saying. He's been putting it to it, I'm telling you, brother. I appreciate you too, beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I get the chance to come to but the farm. The brother, Lewis, he came from the Baton Rouge. I didn't get a chance to come because my job, at, you know, I'm working for myself, and I had to stay back. But I thank a lot for you too, brother. But yes, ma'am, separation, I'm all for it. Not just in deed, but in name and everything that links to this. Is it this white man? I want it's out of it. So I thank Allah. May Allah bless
yes,
you.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Going, sister. I'm listening to you every Thursday. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, beloved. Thank you. Thank you so much for that call. And Brother Hoyle is on the line. And let me open up his mic. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Hoyle.
Wa alaykum salam, my sister, and your host of great panelists, Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence, and as-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Yes,
wow.
I was very impressed with the sisters, with the group from Detroit.
Yes.
And that really needs to be franchised, and even on the brother side, we need to get with some brothers and do the same thing, especially with the black males, because that's the main target right there.
Right.
I know you guys saw the beautiful speech by the minister when he spoke in the islands.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. And this is, you know, it was said that Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it'll take what it takes for them 6 years, it'll take with the people in the islands and all over the world 6 months, you know.
That's right.
To learn and move out on this teaching. But,
yes,
you know, the psychological damage here for the black man in America has been so deep. I mean, it's, engrams, 400-year-old engrams, we say in Dianetics, you know.
Right.
I mean, just deep. So, but like I said, we're seeing so much happening, and I was reading today, found a call about the brother was shot by his white boss up in Arkansas. I know you heard about that.
Yes.
You know, he was not producing sales or whatnot, and you never know. This might be some kind of murderous ritual. You know, he kept sending him knives and whatnot, and just shot him. You know, he was kind of close to it. You know, his wife said he was real close to him. But we're all looking at this, and then the brother was killed over playing loud music, and just situations that go on that show that these people are showing their fame. But also, we're looking at, you were talking about how white people were moving out. Dr. Ridgely was talking about that. Did y'all see about McAfee? You know, there's a whole slew of white people, rich white people that moved all down in
that's right.
South American Belize, Guatemala.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
A lot of them have moved in those areas, Mexico, because, you know, they figure a race war or whatnot. They made a little money and they said, well, let me get the heck out of America. They built a resort communities in different parts of North, South America, just all over the world. But
that's right.
But one thing about it, they don't see that that's home of the original man, too. What ministers, they going to run all of them out.
but you know what? That's the whole point. What we have to understand with them is that there is no connection on their part to this continent, because they're not natural, as you just pointed out, they're not natural to any part of the planet.
No.
You know, they're
like
the product of an experiment. And so, if you remember, they came here.
That's right.
Escaping something. You know, there was a disagreement among them, within themselves, that drove them to this continent in the first place. So, you know, this whole idea of the Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, so-called patriotism, George Washington, you know, all these slave-holding pedophiles, rapists, you know, who founded America. There is no connection, and as Dr. Ridgely, I'm so thankful he did this study. That's why he's such a valuable resource for us here because,
yes, ma'am.
You know, when you follow that kind of thinking, I don't know anybody out here covering this. You know, we see it going on, but we haven't put it together. And I'm so grateful to be with Minister Farrakhan because it helps you,
yes, ma'am,
in that analytical ability. And it's not a coincidence that Minister Farrakhan stepped out on the rostrum in Charlotte in October, mm-hmm, and declared America to be our country.
That's right. That's right.
See, that's a reverse of everyone's mindset about separation, which always perceive both we and white people, when you bring up separation, everyone always perceived that as meaning black people getting up and leaving. But the, mm-hmm, the minister's like, no, this is ours.
That's right. This is ours. That's right.
You know, that's and right. So he says that in October, and then in November, this huge number of,
yes,
black people and brown people come pouring,
mm-hmm,
out,
yes,
to the polls. And the Romney campaign, and I understand watching cable television, the comment,
uh-huh,
was the other night that Romney and his wife are still in shock.
Oh yeah.
Over, uh-huh, losing this. This was inconceivable, really, to many of the Republican Party.
Mm.
And they're wandering around blindly, like, see, this is Allah's chastisement.
That's right.
You know, that where you are completely disconnected from reality. And so they were actually, the reason they thought they were going to win is they were,
mm-hmm,
listening to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard the minister say, you know, 80% of what we think about reality is what we make up in our own mind.
Mm, that's right. Come on.
You know,
and also,
we have a damaged perception of reality. And we have a damaged perception of reality because the white people that we live under, they have the most damaged perception of reality of any people,
mm-hmm,
in the solar system.
Well, it's a sickness. I was talking to a brother today, and we were talking about, if we go into the higher way of thinking of it, you know, why did Allah make this little period of time just to get that last germ out of us, you know, that last evil germ out of us, you know, and this is the most wicked time of life, period, you know, of God making himself, this made devil from Yaqub, you know, if we look at it, you know. What made him when he blew the moon up? I guess they said, well, I mean, if nobody would speak the same language, or you know, I just blow the moon up. What you know, what's in it to make this scientist blow up the moon? You know, I guess he had,
yeah,
to extract that germ out. So we're looking at this 600-year grafted product, like you're saying, Sister Ava. He's a made man, just like the pig. You know, he's not a natural. You know, everywhere he goes, he creates havoc anywhere he goes on the planet, you know. Yeah, if he's in Africa, he kills up, eats up all the roots, you know. But, sister, it's so powerful. I just want everybody to, I'm going to let the next person talk to go back and listen to this show. And just, like I said, put it out there. This is the most beautiful show on Thursdays. And, like I said, everybody's valuable. And we put this together. So Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, all the callers, ooh, this is powerful. So I'll get back
praise
to that.
Praise be to Allah.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. And you know, brother, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to jump in there because when,
sure,
you read off, you know, I meant to say earlier, when you read off those 12 points, and I was just being funny, but it made me think about Christmas, the 12 days of Christmas, and I just think those 12 points,
mm,
that you read off of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in this quote-unquote time and season, we need to be remembering those 12 points. And I say those 12 points are very significant in the month of December because we know in the month of November, December, and January, that's where retailers make most of their money. And so I say that if this is where they make most of our money, if we start to have, as you said, this conversation, you know, Dr. Ridge brought in a different mindset. If we start really changing our mindset, and one of the points you said, make our own neighborhood. So if the minister said this
right.
is our country, then how are we starting to build our own neighborhoods? Instead of, you know, Dr. Ridge said the white flight, we also like to follow them when they leave where they're going instead of staying where we are and building our own community. So what we see out there, we can have right where we are and taking care of our own communities and doing something for ourselves. And like you said, stop begging someone else and running into, as Dr. Ridge also said, just coming to my mind, the abusive relationship. We want to stay in a relationship that is unhealthy and we are tormented in the relationship, but we have so much love for our tormentor that we will just not go. And it's funny because I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and his brother was singing about biracial people and the love that he had for biracial people and love. And he got YouTube videos out, and they, I mean, it's just like people are just really trying to make us be all inclusive when we, you know that the best separate. I mean, the best solution is separation. And the last one I was going to make was on the sisters that are in Detroit. The significant thing that she said to me is that the program is so good that you don't even have to call it Islam. You don't have to call it the teaching, even though they know that they're Muslims. But when we have skill, talents, and abilities, and our program works, you don't even have to put a label on it, because when your representation and your outcome, your output produces good works and good outcomes, people can care less if you're Muslim. This is not all they know. My child wasn't making good grades. My child was disobedient. Then my child is obedient, and my child is making good grades. So whatever y'all are doing at that school, you know, as Brother Christopher in San Francisco said, he has a lot of people that are not Muslim children in his school because the school is good. So when we start doing quality work and then promoting that which is quality, not just because it's a Muslim-owned or Muslim, but when we start promoting the ability or those that have quality stuff, then we can start collectively doing stuff together, and then we can collectively start building a community where these skills and talents come together as we have conferences, but then they start moving together, and then we'll start having all of the things that we need to build that community that Brother Robert talked about, that community that is sustained by the mosque at the central location, but we spread out from around there and get those that have talent. So when our people come, they're not saying, well, I don't want to join. No, we like, you know, you can just come and be who you are. But like the Mormons, you're going to submit to the culture because the culture is going to be so strong that you're going to automatically, your lifestyle is going to conform to the nature of the culture that you're in.
Yes, sir. Well, we're being joined now by our special guest, Mark Thompson. And we are so pleased and delighted that this is a man who is supremely busy, but he has taken time to join us this evening. And before I bring him on, I do want to talk about those of you that might not know him. I happen to be a fan of his show, Make It Plain. But Mark Thompson has been a broadcaster for 24 years. In fact, his 25th anniversary will be 2013. And he began his career with Radio One, Inc., under the guidance of Kathy Hughes. And his show, Make It Plain, was the first to sign on XM Satellite Radio in 2001 and the only show to have been broadcast on XM exclusively and then Sirius exclusively. And now, of course, the two have joined together. And Brother Mark is the first and only black talk show host on Sirius XM left, and he's the only one who is African-American in the United States hosting a daily national show on a progressive liberal talk format as opposed to limiting to urban or conservative format. Mark has broadcasted from South Africa during the first Democratic elections, and that was where he received his traditional African name, Matsumela Mafumo, which means firmly rooted soldier. He's nationally known as a longtime NAACP activist, and he emceed at the Million Man March. He's founder of the Umoja Party, and he is an ordained minister. Mark has a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism from the University of the District of Columbia and a Master's in Divinity from Howard University. And he's also the father of a 19-year-old daughter, which you would not know to look at him, and he's a 9-year-old son. Brother Mark, welcome to Elevated Places.
Sister Ava, thank you for having me. First of all, I greet you in the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
And, you know, I'm a fan of yours as well. It has been years since you and I have been in one another's company, but I have followed your career as a laborer and as a servant to our people. And as one of the leading women in our people's movement and one of the leading women in the nation. And I have a profound amount of respect for you. It's really an honor to be invited on your show tonight. Thank you.
Well, you are more than welcome. And I want you to know my 14-year-old daughter, because we listen to you in the car during the evenings.
Okay.
And she is, like me, a really big fan, and when I told her you were going to be on, I think she may have called in from another phone at this point, but she said, oh, my God, how did you get him?
Well, no, I appreciate that, and again, I'm glad to be here, and
yes.
I let me apologize. I know I have, if your daughter is listening to me and she's 14, I know I have a tendency to carry on when I'm on the air. I just came off my show and was carried on something terrible. So let me just say in advance, anything I've done to carry on the way I have, please charge it to my head, not to my heart. I'm just trying to fight the good fight.
Oh, yeah, now you're a strong soldier for the cause, and I've also got on the line Dr. Ridley Muhammad, who is an agricultural economist, and
yes.
he's our minister of agriculture,
yes, sir,
in the Nation of Islam, and of course Brother Terrence Muhammad, my co-host.
Yes.
And as you came on, and I've been listening to you talking about, I know this assault on Susan Rice and a lot of the post-election acute racism that's re-manifesting itself. But we were talking earlier, Brother Mark, Dr. Ridley did an article and did some research, and he has shown us some amazing statistics with regard to this last election, and I wanted to get your thoughts on what he was sharing with us. First of all, that 6 million fewer white people voted in this presidential election. And then there's been something of an exodus taking place where a number of Caucasian people are actually leaving the United States. And these are not elderly retirees either. These are affluent people between the ages of 25, 45, and he made a very powerful connection between those statistics and all of this objection to this little small increase in taxes that the president is seeking that would help this country come up out of the economic recession or depression, really what it was at its worst. And, you know, this resistance to repairing and upgrading the infrastructure.
Right, right.
Yes, sir. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, and it's fascinating. In fact, I'd like to see that report. I'd be happy to even share it with my audience. I think that's
awesome.
That's a worthwhile discussion. It actually supports a hypothesis I had at the very beginning of all of this. You had an African American Democratic nominee and a Mormon Republican nominee, and to many whites in this country, African Americans and Mormons are both objectionable. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
So I had a hypothesis. I said, well, one of two things is going to happen. The average white voter is either going to vote for the African American because that is the objectionable person that they know because of the nature of Mormonism and its secrecy, and I'm not judging it on that basis. I'm just saying it's just the fact, you know, it's not a lot we know about it. That's the nature of the faith. A lot of people would be not inclined to vote for that which they didn't know. They would either do that, vote for the African-American, or not vote at all. And I think that's what we saw. I think that the two choices that were given to that traditional, even middle-of-the-road to far-right voter was that both were objectionable. So I'm not really surprised at all about people leaving, about people not showing up. I also would say this, you know, we're in a very serious propaganda war.
Mm.
And when you've got a whole segment, maybe even half the population, that uses Fox News as its primary source of information, which is so misleading. Now, they took a poll. 49% of the people say that Acorn got Obama reelected. We all know they killed Acorn. Fox, first of all, the same network that destroyed Acorn has convinced people that Acorn got him reelected. That's some serious mind control. So when you're dealing with that, anything is possible. So that's really not very surprising to me at all. So you have Fox News saying, well, everybody's taxes are going to go up. What the average white middle class voter who watches Fox does not know is that had anything to do with them. They vote against their own interests. We're talking about the very same people who are in the 1%, the upper 2% that are going to be affected, not the rest of us. Economically today, the white working class voter, the black working class voter, have very little in common. We're doing a little bit worse. But see, America's goal and America's mission has always been to prevent both minds coming together, to prevent both sides from seeing, hey, we don't necessarily have to be at war with each other because all of these things affect all of us. But Fox News helps to perpetuate that. And so the perception is, oh, Obama is out here to help just the black folk. And the rest of us are going to get put in chains, or we're going to have to leave the country. And it's really unfortunate and absurd that that is going on. But I think that's precisely what's happening. I'd love to see that report because it doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, Dr. Ridgely, you heard that.
I'm just enjoying it. I mean, I'm enjoying the brother's analysis.
Yeah.
You know, he got
I
it right.
I love it.
They have scared themselves to death, okay? They have actually scared themselves to death, and they're running from their own self. And so I just say, let them run. Let them just, you know, drink themselves to death or whatever. Because really, Obama, President Obama, has done nothing but try to help him. Like Mr. Farrakhan said, let the man help you. Don't hamstring him. He's trying to help you. But as I stated before, white people are the type that if they find that a black person is using their foot, they'll cut their foot off and then realize, oh, my God, that's my foot I just cut off.
Yeah,
I just
couldn't
allow that black person to use it.
Yeah. It's a very sad and sick state of affairs. And they would literally call my cutting off the foot, Brother Muhammad, Dr. Ridgely. The proverbial foot in this instance is the very nation itself. Let's burn down the country. Let's cut the nation up. Let's destroy it rather than allow something positive like this to happen. And I think it's no better. We found no better example of this than this. Mitt Romney and his wife and other Republicans and Karl Rove and everybody actually thought they were going to win.
Right.
Now,
that's right.
I knew. Now, Sister Ava, Brother Ridgely, we don't have resources that they have. But we were all looking at the same numbers. They have more resources than we have. So that means they had to know more than we knew. What were they looking at that convinced them to win other than that mutual admiration society of Fox News Channel? You know, those saying, you shouldn't believe your own press. They believed it. And so if those people at that level, these are their leaders. This is Karl Rove. This is Karl Rove himself, who's nicknamed Turd Blossom. This is Mitt Romney himself. These are their very leaders. If they thought that they were going to win, what does the average layperson, how easily could they be manipulated and confused and put in a position where they think, oh, the best thing for me to do is get the hell out of here, excuse me.
That's right. That's interesting because, in fact, I heard you, I think last night on your show you were talking about that, you know, what could they have been looking at? And we were talking earlier about this damaged perception of reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep playing back in my mind, you know, Ann Coulter warned them.
One
of their own. She warned them over a year ago. She said, if Chris Christie does not, the governor of New Jersey, does not accept the nomination, if he will not run, Mitt Romney is going to be nominated and we will lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
We will lose. There was just nothing they could do with him to get him across. And we really watched them disintegrate. But like you're saying, Brother Mark and Dr. Ridgely, you know, if the top tier of their intellectual crowd is that deluded, then what hope does the rest of the population have? And I guess that's why it's so dangerous for us right now, because you have now that, again, here's a murder, Brother Mark, in Florida, teenager, 17 years old.
That's right.
Loud music.
Yeah.
Come on.
And you know what's more frightening than the murder itself is a sister from L.A. sent me a text that there was discussion on radio shows out there that black men, young black males need to start turning their music down. You remember when Trayvon was killed? Stop wearing hoodies.
Yeah.
You know, so the problem was they should not have had that music on.
Yeah. No, right. It is open season. All of that is used as a pretext to all the things. And what we're witnessing is history repeating itself. Second time we have a president from Illinois. Second time we have...
Whoa.
We're on the precipice of a civil war. People talking about secession,
right,
just like they did back then. Then people took away voting rights. That's what they're doing now. People started lynching folks. That's what they're doing now under the pretext of playing too loud music. This is the exact same atmosphere that existed 100 years ago. And we have to stand up and not only defend ourselves, but speak out loud and boldly about it so that our people are educated and informed. Because let me just say this too, Brother Rizzi. I was listening as you all were talking about us doing for ourselves and,
yes, sir,
and having our own businesses. See, in order to do that, we've got to be on a level where we're able to survive, contribute to ourselves, spend our own money with ourselves. Republicans walk around. You mentioned Ann Coulter. She now has come out in favor of Obama's plan to keep us from going on the fiscal cliff. She's even gone that far as in the past 24 hours and said Republicans need
that.
Republicans need, and we know how bad she is. She's saying her own party needs to acknowledge this and deal with this. If the president were allowed, and again, I mean, don't get me wrong, we as a people have to hold him accountable as well. I want to be clear about that.
Yes, sir.
But in doing so, if he were allowed to even answer our demands, and let's start talking about infrastructure, if the country started rebuilding itself, highways, roads, bridges, my personal pet thing is high-speed rail. Brother Ridgely, you know how many small businesses that begets?
That's right.
How many businesses even our people could begin to open? You know, when you start building that kind of stuff, you got to start opening up restaurants. Restaurants have to start buying food. Food comes from farms that we might have the ability to own and control again. It one after the other. But they know that, and so the plan is we're going to stop everything. We're not going to let anything happen. We're not going to let any of us prosper, even if it means, like you said, it's a very good point that the minister makes about cutting off all of it. We all are going to go down. We're going to take ourselves out in flames rather than help other people up. The last thing I'll say is this. They need to really understand that America is changing. America is no longer a majority white nation. I love to quote the words of James Baldwin. He said, "We have come to the end of a language and now are about forming a new one. For America is the last white country the world will ever see."
Mm. Wow.
Wow. Powerful.
Yeah, that leaves one speechless. That is beautiful.
Powerful.
That's what he said.
Mm-hmm. And we're living in it happening.
Right. And what you're saying, brother, is so powerful about that, the infrastructure development. And, you know, we could not have planned it better, though, in terms of a letting our people know through this process. White people are really letting us know now that we're going to have to do for ourselves, because they're not going to even do for themselves.
Right.
Right. That's right.
Which is, isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the craziest thing? That you'd rather suffer and die and be broke and not have what you need to have in order to stop. And, you know, I was talking with Marc Morial earlier of the Urban League. He was on the show tonight. Okay. And as you know, many of the civil rights organizations met on Monday, thankfully, as black organizations, to talk about what they were going to demand of the first black president. I think that's very important.
Right.
Because, you know, we and I'm sure you are, we're in a very awkward moment in history. You know, when we look at our history, we've had great debates. The first one with Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois, the second one to some extent between Malcolm and Martin. Now the debate with us is, how do we interact? How do we engage the first African-American president? Are we polite? Do we give him a pass? Or do we treat the office the way we always have and treat it with resistance? And see, I'm in favor of that. So when these groups met on Monday, I think people finally get that's what we need to do. That's how we need to engage. And I think people are getting that is very, very critical. We don't need to be taken for granted anymore. We deliver Democrats to office.
That's right.
All the time. You know, listen, African American, whatever your faith, if you're in the nation, if you're in the church, wherever you are, you vote 9 times out of 10, you're delivering a Democrat to office. Why should we be ignored and taken for granted? And so right now the position we're in to get out of this awkward moment is to say, okay, we've had the honeymoon. We've had the Jackie Robinson era.
Right.
We celebrate you. Now it is time to hold accountable. This is not about a personal thing. This is about the United States government and the office of the presidency and seeing to it that we aren't stepped on the way we have historically been.
Well said. It's time for the balance now.
Yeah.
And I love what you said. We've had the history. You know, we voted history the first time. And it's important to point that out, because black people were already Democratic supporters.
Right.
Yeah.
Before President Obama ran. I mean, really going back to Franklin Roosevelt, when we really started turning Democrat.
That's right.
Until really by the time President Obama ran, we were already pretty much in the 90 percentile.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and so it is now time for us to make some demands, because we are a voting bloc, and we are the biggest bloc of all those that supported him. We are his base politically. So he's got to get past any concerns with the racial identification, which he found out he cannot escape anyway,
right,
no matter what.
Right.
That's inescapable. So he needs to embrace it.
Right, right.
Yes.
But, Brother Mark, you are just fabulous, and I'm just starstruck here right now.
Oh, please, please.
But I want you to know that I will continue to listen, and to our listeners, and I apologize, we have a gaggle of callers But I got so caught up in the conversation. If and when we can get you back, we would love to have you.
I'd love to be back.
But I want to remind the listeners, you're the host of SiriusXM's Make It Plain. And you start at 6 Eastern, right?
Yeah, 6 to 9 Eastern, channel
127. 6 to 9 Eastern, because I'm in Chicago, so you're 5 to 8 here.
Yeah.
But that's 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Make It Plain, Sirius Left. It is a phenomenal program. Thank you, Brother Mark. And, of course, I want to thank Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, Sister Rona, Sister LaDonna, for making this show possible. And Allah willing, we will be with you next Thursday night. Thank you all so much.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you for listening to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Be sure to join us every Thursday here on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. If you are a member of our Blog Talk Radio family and you enjoyed the show today, mark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, the new era will be feminine in nature.